Welcome to the 10-Minute Entrepreneur Podcast, intended to equip and encourage business owners and aspiring entrepreneurs. Taught by active business owner, best-selling author, and teacher, Sean Castrina.
All right, this is Sean Castrina with the 10-Minute Entrepreneur Podcast, the most listened to practical podcast for anybody looking to start and grow a business, or if you happen to be a business owner that is stuck. I'm excited about our guest today because we have the best guests. We have actual entrepreneurs. I have David Kidder. He's not only a great author of New to Big, as well as a Startup Playbook. Startup Playbook is something I've seen out there for years, and I just purchased one of his books in the last 5 minutes because I purchased a book of anybody who's on the show. He has been an angel investor in over 40 companies, and he is the co-founder and CEO of Bionic. Man, that's a nice bio. David, it's great to have you on the show.
I'm very grateful to be here. Thank you.
All right. So, you know, I don't know your opinion on this, but I've always said I probably would not be a good writer if I didn't personally be a good entrepreneur. Like the two, you know, the two kind of give me all my stuff, you know, all my illustrations, all my, you know, I'm thinking like if I owned a business pre-2008 and even pre-virus, and I was writing about how to pivot, it would be, you know, how you pivot now is different maybe than you'd pivot in 2007. Do you find that your writing comes from, you know, obviously being a VC and starting companies and being a co-founder?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is one of the key things that when you kind of bet your life on an idea, you always have to come from a proprietary gift. I find that entrepreneurs, this is true about myself, is that if I haven't really experienced it, or I don't intimately know the problem or need or how to, and the question of why me, I really can't learn by doing and then explain to others. And so I think it's in that confluence of, you know, a life experience with a proprietary gift or an obsession that allows you to solve something and then tell the story. And I think it's not a theoretical thing. Yeah. It has to be a very practical thing.
Yeah, it's amazing. You know, I speak at colleges and I always, you know, will go into the professor's office before, you know, that I'm going to speak for. And I just try to have a nice 2-minute conversation with them. And I'm, you know, it's a business 101 class, an entrepreneurship class. And we just start talking. I'm like, you're teaching what?
Yeah.
You know, I'm like they'll pick up like a book they're going through with their class and it's like the Lean Startup, you know? And I'm like, okay, that sounds great in theory, but I've yet to be able to start a business for under $100 that ever employed anybody. You know, and it's just, you know, you're like, you try to dig a little bit and I'm like, golly day, you know, you got it, man, to teach something, it really does help if you've actually done it.
Well, Eric Ries in the Lean Startup talks a lot about the methodology of staying lean. And one of the reasons why you want to stay lean is so you have as many shots on goal as you can in a period of a short funding window. So if you, as the job of a founder is really only three things. It's a vision and a roadmap. And for about 3 years, which you have to be very accurate in the year you're in, probably on a quarterly basis and in the quarter on a monthly basis. Yeah. Secondly is talent, hiring the right people at the right time, the right order to live out that vision in the right stages. And so talent's fatal. You get the wrong person in the wrong job, 6 months in there, you replace them, you lose a year of your life and it's out. The third is to never run out of money, whether you earn it or you raise it, that money has to create as much opportunity for you. And that's where lean comes in, because you can use a model of experimentation to teach you, do I have the right solution? And so being cost effective allows you to stay alive longer. And so when you find that product market fit, we're the right people, and you're pretty accurately in your prediction of how the company's gonna get built, you have a chance to build something special.
And I may have got, the book with the bicycle on the front. I'm trying to think.
No, it's this paintbrush that's sweeping a circle. And what that's what's a metaphor for is the whole concept of build, measure, learn.
Yeah, you know what I'm doing? I'm confusing him with the person who had the one with the bicycle, because I do remember it now, and now you're jarring my thing.
Yeah, I think the bicycle one is called The Power of Habit, and it's a similar book around how to lead yourself and create a playbook.
Yeah, there was just one about, I guess I got caught, it may have been the lean, and because it's funny, you know, I love reading, and I always say that you got to guard cash like oxygen. And in my book, The 8 Unbreakable Rules, I talk about that, because the biggest problem with startups is they can't afford to fail because they don't have enough money to fail. So as you teach that, I'm like, wait, no, I completely agree with that. I think capital is, you know, it is oxygen. And if you piss through it, it's hard to have a lot of shots at the goal.
Yeah, I think one of the other undervalued aspects of being a founder is just how you think. And I wrote this book, my sixth book, and it was about 10 years ago now, called The Startup Playbook. I went out and spent about 300 hours with 40 of some of the best entrepreneurs in the world, Elon Musk and Eric Ries, Reid Hoffman, the founder of LinkedIn, wrote the foreword of the book, just to ask them basically, like, how do you bet your life? What's amazing is that all these entrepreneurs, Sarah Blakely and Robin Chase and others, all basically said through these same five criteria, I call them the five lenses, if an idea passes through these criteria in the work of building a company, you have an extraordinary outcome. So I'll share those really quickly.
Yeah, I was going to say, let's go through those. And I'm adding a second book to my checkout window.
Yeah. All right. So if you want to know, like, how Elon, you know, what's the methodology or the process of betting life and executing, it's basically this. The first is the previous comment I made about proprietary gift. The question of why you. What is something you understand that creates an unfair advantage in the company you're building? So proprietary gift is really why you, why now question. And in the absence of a proprietary gift, you're sort of like chasing white space, chasing competitors. It very often just, whoever's gonna win a space just cares more or knows more than you do. They have a secret. The second lens is extreme focus. Ironically, the more things you do, the more mediocre you are. So in a way, optionality is the enemy. It's so hard to build just one company, but building multiple companies or one company with lots of options, in a way, increases the probability you fail. And that's sort of counterintuitive because entrepreneurs like options. And that's where lean comes in, because you want to eliminate things to get extreme focus on the solution to that one problem. The third lens is to build painkillers and not vitamins. I've been talking about this now for a decade. So it's sort of out in the ether now. But the idea that chronic, lifelong, malignant pain, ideally in customers, means that, you know, if it's a vitamin, they'll try it and they'll set it down. And, you know, as Elon once told me, wishful thinking is the enemy. So we don't want to wait to a marketplace to evangelize it, to build a case for it. You want to start with a lot of demand. And so painkillers are things that people will always use once they start using it, even if they know they never knew they needed it. The fourth lens is really about execution. And that's the 10X factor. And this is largely misunderstood. The idea that what's the one part of the business that's impossible to replicate? So if I asymmetrically invest in that one thing, it'll become 10 times better over a long period of time than anyone in the world. And the fifth lens is really one you build with intention, which is how do I create permanence with my customer, at least for 3 years? And so this is under the auspices of, like, monopolies are good. It's good for the customer and you. So you can stay in their life longer to solve the whole problem. So those five lenses really shape my thinking, both as an investor, as a founder. And then I would say this last thing, which is when you're choosing a marketplace, it's always best to choose one you have super customers. So you can get a customer who's really big, and then you get the rest of the marketplace. So if you can solve it for a P&G or a GE or a huge company, you get, but if you solve for middle, it doesn't necessarily means you're gonna go up, and it's probably unrecognized for a smaller company. So very different marketplaces between enterprise and SMB and middle. So getting that right, your intention and setting your intention of who you're solving this for is critical to get right.
No, I'm a page into notes, and we're 6 minutes into this cotton picking thing. Hey, listen, you guys know we bring absolutely the best guests you can possibly have in this space, from Stanford professors all the way down to entrepreneurs to everything. These five things, I feel like I'm a pretty bright guy. I think I've read about 1,000 books. I just learned probably three things in an order I never had them in. I had pieces of them, but I never had them laid out in a way that I'm these are spot on, and why I bought two books today. I'm gonna have my team reach out to the Eric on the Lean Startup and get him as a guest, so I can have him take me through his book. So I got two to-do lists.
He's a wonderful guy, and he's a brilliant entrepreneur, and he's a great guy.
Yeah. So tell us about your newest book.
Yeah. So the new book is called New to Big, and it's based on my co-founder, our work at Bionic. And Bionic is a collective of entrepreneurs and venture capitalists who work to refound large organizations. We work directly with the CEOs of P&G and Nike and General Mills and Citigroup and others to help them do the job of growth, right? And there's innovation and there's sort of transformation, but really the urgency around growth is really a form of management. So what we believe is that in the same way most large organizations are sort of big to bigger, they're focused on efficiency and optimization around the total addressable marketplace that exists today. Growth actually lives not in planning, but in discovery. It really lives in the portfolios around new customer problems and needs. We call it TAM to TAP, total addressable problem, total addressable needs. And what we do is we build portfolios of startups inside those organizations to go solve them. Because all of a startup is a solution to a new problem. And if you do that well and you discover the giftedness of the company through those lenses, proprietary gift with focus, the same things I'm talking about, the organization can learn how to grow again. And this is really important in a post-COVID era when the needs in the world of customers have been disrupted. This form of management, there was an HBS study that came out last week on our transformation work with P&G, is really almost the opposite of an MBA as a capability. And it's a form of management we've been pioneering now for 7 years with great success. So that's Bionic. And the new to big really describes the kernel, the 1.0 of that, where Bionic is sort of at the very advanced 5 and 6.0 of that. So we gave it away, that kernel, to the world, and the response has been phenomenal. But there's a really very special moment right now in the world where both publicly and privately, we kind of have to go through a refounding of our personal lives, our professional lives, and how we think and the skills we draw on are really about leaping into a new future and moving from a surviving mindset to winning. And getting there really is about relearning new skills in our mindset and the activities we do each day that will produce that new outcome.
Yeah, no, I was talking about, you know, obviously the virus, and the big word now is reimagining. You know, that's the buzzword of 2020. And I think there'll be an entrepreneurial surge post virus, you know, whether it completely ends or whatever the case may be, like never before. And what I tell people is that, what if you could get a glimpse of the worst case scenario? Like if you could get a glimpse of something nobody's ever really imagined happening, well, we got it. You really got it to where can your business, now you can just imagine other different things of that nature, but now you can, when you're starting a business, you got to think so differently. You got to think, how durable is this model?
Well, you know, necessity is the mother of an invention, as they say, or has been said many of their millennia. I think that there's, as much about that, I just add that it's also about setting down past goals. So the things that you had planned for going into 2020 and what your company was going to become and who you were going to become and how much money or success or outcome you were driving to, in large part, I think we now understand how significant our energy is versus the tsunami of an outside force, right? And so while our intention is to have all those goals remain true, the reality is that most of them, or a lot of them, won't. And so the longer we hang on to that sort of trapeze bar of the past, and we're trying to grab a new one, our life is being ripped off limb by limb. And so until you can set down those old goals and grab that new sort of winning trapeze bar into the future, you know, psychologically, you're really living in two histories. And part of a reimagining, or we call it, reactivating or just refounding, is really just stepping fully and courageously into a new path. And that means letting go and setting down both the behavioral psychology level, but also in the work that we do. It has to change.
Yeah, no, there's no doubt. Things have definitely changed. So as a co-founder, as a VC, we're going to take you into that role. You're at a, you're at a dinner event, a fundraiser, and somebody's sitting at the table and they recognize who you are. You start talking about your book and the person says, hey, you know, I'm looking to start a company. What's the one or two pieces of startup advice that you can give, you know, quickly that, you know, I always say that a 15-year-old can understand, but they clearly get the point that you have found as your go-to one or two pieces of advice.
I mean, I would talk about why would you want to make a crazy decision like that? I'd say it in an encouraging way, which is what I'm trying to go after really is obsession. Obsession is not about the idea. It's not about the marketplace. It's about the need. And once I can understand the obsession, The next question I have is the why you question. It's really the proprietary gift. What do you know about solving that problem because of that obsession that no one in the world understands? And here's why. 80% of all growth value, as in all the money you ever make as an investor in growing, comes from 7% of capital deployed. So if I invest in 100 entrepreneurs, 7 out of the 100 will be unbounded returns. The rest will go to zero and I might get my money back. And so when you go back to the beginning, you say, well, why did I invest in Sean? Why did I invest in Susie, whoever? The quality of that decision comes down to two criteria. One is high conviction, right? As in, why them, why now? Their obsession and their gift. And the second is non-consensus, meaning that if I asked you, should I invest in this person, and you thought it was all a good idea, I shouldn't invest. And the reason why is it's not new to the world. You have to be able to make non-consensus, high-conviction investment decisions because of what you don't know. And that's very uncomfortable. And so I'm looking at the entrepreneur and their obsession, but it's really about their secret. And betting on them is typically about 60% of the reason why you invest in a seed stage entrepreneur all the way through the B round is because of them. They are the reason.
Oh, it's funny. I'm so glad you said that because I've always told people that. I've always said, man, because I invest and bring on people. I say, forget the idea. I bet on the person who's picking riding the horse. Bet on the jockey, not the horse. And that person, that it factor sometimes is, it's legit and it's real. And I know I'm not the only one now that thinks that.
Yeah. But and I think it's important as an investor, you have a thesis around how you invest. What are the signals you're looking for? Long history of deep, deep obsession and work in a single problem with extreme focus. So you can see these things illuminated in the conversations because, it's going back to the wishful thinking is the enemy. If it's not about the obsession, it's really about the entrepreneur. They want to become famous. They want to become great. They want to make money. Those are all about them. It's not about the need. Yeah. And so born to do it in the need is almost a sacrificial journey that has nothing to do with the outcome. It's just, it's because this is what they need to do. And I think that's the signal I'm looking for. And then my second criteria is, could they build a team to fill in their weaknesses? What are those? And you start structuring around the path, which was the first thing I said of the three jobs of an entrepreneur, vision and roadmap, talent and timing, and, never run out of money, either raise or earn it. Yeah. Those are the three jobs of the founder. Problem is they're stupidly hard to do really well. They take time.
Man, that is incredible stuff. Listen, I this is incredible. I bought new to big before I got on the interview. Now I just adding the second one to my thing, the startup playbook. So incredible stuff. Listen, I can't tell you how much I appreciate you being on the podcast. I mean, I feel like I'm getting a little bit of an education and I like that. Most of the time when I talk to people, I talk to really sharp people, but rarely, to be frank with you, do they say that much that I haven't heard.
Oh, wow.
They say it in a different way. And you've given me your why thing. I like that. What I've grabbed out of this that I really like is like, what do you have that gives you an unfair advantage?
Simon Sinek is a friend, wonderful human being, talks about start with why. I think that's the personal question.
Yeah.
When you're an entrepreneur and you're looking for investors, it's really the why you question, which is really that next step in the self-discovery, the obsession. Yeah. So that's I'm looking for the Simon Sinek question to start with why. Then I'm looking for the why you, which is really about the gift and the timing. And then the third is just through those lenses, and through those lenses, you can really start to understand. But more importantly, I think it's right now in this disruption, this age of disruption, this great reset, as we've written about, is that question about our own personal lives. And so, when you look back, I think I want to close this because I really would like to just encourage people right now that if there is a mindset that matters underneath the why, right, it's really a question of, am I making decisions through fear or love? And we back up, most of us make the decisions through fear, right? And there's a pervasive dominance of fear lies, but especially now. And the danger is it gets cemented because we're just surviving. But to get through this, we have to move our mindset to, I like to refer to it as a responsible abundance. Like there actually is opportunity everywhere. It's easy to say that, but it's really starts with you. And in when you can take care of your family, do the things you need to do, there's challenges. I get that. We have those as well. but it's going to be because you can see it. And that becomes from an abundance mindset. So that's courageous to get there, but it's a really important moment to reflect on how you're going to think in this era that will get you through.
No, man, I love it. It's incredible stuff. I have David Kidder here on the site, on the podcast today. He is the co-founder of Bionic. He's been a VC for more than 40 companies, and he's an author of countless good books. Again, I encourage you to go to Amazon or wherever you buy books and start with New to Big, and then you can start up with the Startup Playbook. When you get that one in your cart, you get the second one in your cart. So, David, how do they connect with you, or do they just go buy your books?
Thanks. You can always reach me at davidskidder.com. I do a lot of speaking, coaching, and my bio work. And also my company. It's the most important front end of everything we're doing, which is onbionic.com. So if you're sitting, you know, in an executive position at an enterprise, a Fortune 500 company, and you're like, how do I refound, you know, this company? How do I get growth back into the enterprise as a permanent capability? Growth mindset and systems. You could always reach me at david@onbionic.com and or our website, onbionic.com. We're probably the pioneer in the world today doing that work. And it's a great privilege to do it.
Man, incredible. Listen, great podcast. And hopefully you have learned something today. The podcast has three very simple objectives. I want to equip, encourage, and educate entrepreneurs so you can be better, not make the mistakes that, you know, I always say failure is best heard through a secondhand story, and it's a whole lot cheaper. David, thanks for being on the podcast. You can just hang on for 2 seconds as I let the audience go. Listen, we will talk again tomorrow. Thank you so much for listening to the podcast. Tell others.